So I'm currently in the deepest dungeons of the Westfalenstadion right now, struggling to find my way out with Archie Rintert. Hello, Archie.
Hello, Stefan. I don't think that the Signal Iduna Park, nay, the Westfalenstadion actually has dungeons, but it actually does have two jail cells home and away that we're just approaching in the Südtribüne coming up on our left. Fun fact.
Always good for a bit of trivia is our Archie. Alongside us, we also have Kit Holden. Hello, Kit. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Very well. Let's kick things off. What did you think of the game tonight?
I thought it was a sort of exciting, scrappy game. And I thought, yeah, good result for anybody who wants to see a title race in the Bundesliga again.
It was a nice cliched response from Kit. Archie, what did you think?
Was very impressed by Dortmund. I don't think it was probably their best performance of the season exactly, actually. I thought Bayern were very underwhelming. They looked, I think, actually, as Kit put it very quite nicely to me in the first half, almost bored of this whole thing. I couldn't quite understand why Ribery was played centrally. It was, I think, done in mind with trying to push Alaba on a little bit further on the left. But they didn't really, I know, use their major strength. Yeah, I think their major strength has been out wide. And of course, okay, they were missing Ian Robben and Kingsley Coman as another truck comes past.
This isn't quite the quiet comfort of a studio, but, you know, it's just kind of like on the grounds reporting that people love. Yeah, see, the interesting thing is I thought for the most part Bayern simply made their best to get down both wings and swing the ball in, which at first I thought Dortmund were struggling with, and then I realised actually Dortmund were quite comfortable letting them do that.
I think especially with the extra centre-back this evening as well, they were all the more comfortable, which made it a little bit more puzzling that they continued to do that, particularly when there were no real clear goal chances being created, only when Dortmund managed to hash a clearance, really.
I should point out we're now passing the Dortmund fan zone, which is positively bubbling with enthusiasm. Looks like quite a party, Archie.
It does, but to be fair, there's just as many people out here as I've seen after a defeat. They tend to drink win, lose or draw. It's just that I think they'll drink a little bit harder tonight, particularly because they're only 3 points off Bayern now.
A couple of guys in kilts.
Yep. Stefan's always happy to see a fellow countryman.
That might be the Edinburgh Borussian group that I have met in the past.
Yeah. It might not.
It might not, yeah. We do know how the Germans seem to love to dress up in kilts just to almost mock my dear nation. Anyway, we're going off track here. Kit, how much did Bayern miss the injuries of Vidal, Martinez, Coman? I'm struggling to think who else was missing, actually, but is that everyone?
Robin.
Oh, God, of course, Robin. Do you think these guys would have made a huge difference tonight?
I think Robin probably would have done because he was on brilliant form in the last couple of games. He's been the player driving them forward, and I don't think Vidal and the rest would have made so much of a difference because they were very organised in midfield by, and they were just quite blunt up front and still a bit shaky at the back. And I think that's more to do with like structural things and the fact that they're getting used to playing under Angelotti, getting used to post Pep era and things. And I don't think. Yeah, I think Robin would have made a difference, but God, I don't know, if Vidal had been there, would it have revolutionised? No, probably not.
I guess, considering the kind of grand scope of how the season's gone so far, was this Bayern being their usual, well, not their usual, but the kind of lazy, lacking in pace, the side that we've seen kind of struggle through the league so far, was this another game with that? Or did we see Thomas Tuchel do something special with Dortmund tonight?
I don't know. I think Tuchel at least looked like he had an idea of how he was going to go about the game and how he was going to set up. Bayern just looked, like you say, they just looked like they were sort of ambling about, waiting for the goals to happen and the win to sort of transpire, and then it didn't happen. And then, yeah, Dortmund made actually pretty much just as many mistakes as Bayern did, but they made up for it immediately, and they were sharper and they were better organised, and they were just, yeah, they just looked like they knew what they were doing, whereas Bayern was a bit listless.
Archie, we saw two German players who stood out for me in different reasons were Thomas Müller and Mario Götze. Müller, who I think for most part was once again pretty quiet when he was really relied upon, considering that a lack of strength meant that Ancelotti really had no choice but to play him. But on the other hand, Götze really seemed to step into a more responsible role for Dortmund tonight.
Götze, especially in the first half, was excellent. I'm still thinking that he's creeping up back towards his former self. There's still a way to go, but
doesn't look as though he's still can play 90 minutes, can he?
Yeah, I'd still question that as well. But there is this incisiveness to him once again that he looks like he's got that yard of pace which he seemed to have mysteriously lost in Munich, maybe with a couple of pounds added on as well.
Well, the food is delicious.
He said in the week that the old Götze isn't going to come back and that he's a different player now. And I think there's something to that, because I think Pep certainly gave him, for all that he didn't play him much and he's struggled at Bayern, Pep did, I think, improve his positioning and his kind of... Yeah, his the way he operates as a cog in the machine rather than a simple flair player, which is essentially what he still was when he left Dortmund. And I think in some ways we're kind of expecting him to return to this kind of cocky, swaggering teenager. And actually, he's right. He is a completely different player now. And like, if you judge him on those terms, I think he is at his best form. His build-up play and his positioning has been absolutely fine for most of the season so far. And, you know, what more do you want from the player if that's what the player he is now? So.
What I'd like to see more of him, which I saw originally... Oh, God, we got to run.
Run for the train. Okay, we've caught our breath, we caught the train, now we're back in central Dortmund. Do you remember what you wanted to say about Götze?
No, I do. So, I just think that he's... So, just opening a door. I think he perhaps lost his confidence in terms of taking on a man. And I mean, I don't think he's as much of a wing player, for example, in... Well, obviously he made his name as a number 10, but I think that confidence to kind of go past a player or indeed go through one, as he has done a little bit more, is something that he's really regained. Though I do to a certain extent buy into Kit's theory that he has changed as a player, and I'm still not 100% on him in terms of positionally, but I think that Thomas Tuchel is going to be an excellent coach for him in the future. Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting that Götze started this game instead of Dembele, who was very much the man of the moment at the start of the season, and Gonzalo Castro, who's been one of the most consistent players. So certainly intriguing to see whether he continues to do well. Anyway, we'll call that a wrap since we're slowly approaching the pub. So thanks very much, guys.
What do you mean the pub? We don't drink coffee.
No, to the library. I meant the library. We're off to the library to do some studying. Late night library studies. Okay, bye-bye. Okay, so 3 days later, I'm now sitting with Ross Dunbar. Well, digitally sitting with him. He's in Spain. I'm in Germany. Ross, how are you getting on?
I'm good. How are you?
Very well indeed. We just listened to myself, Stefan Sepcion there, alongside Kit Holden and Archie Rintott. First of all, I guess I'll ask you for your opinion on how you thought the big game on Saturday went.
I think it was a strange game because... although Dortmund did really well in the first half, they were really intense in their play and they created, I think, the best chances. They kind of conceded a lot of territory and a lot of possession to Bayern in the second half. It was quite a risky tactic. I mean, I would have expected Dortmund to have gone out and tried to really assert their dominance in the second half because it worked so well, but they seemed to kind of revert into their own shell, and Bayern really took control of the second half without really turning the screw. I mean, they squeezed the midfield and had a lot of dominance, but I don't really recall a lot of great chances. I mean, the offside goal was a fantastic finish in the circumstances, but other than that, Xabi Alonso hit the bar from distance. I don't really recall Bayern forcing Burkey into many great saves. I mean, the expected goal said that Bayern should have won the game. I think that's a load of nonsense, to be quite honest, because in the second half, Aubameyang had two absolutely golden chances that normally Bayern are the kind of team that would punish that kind of slackness in front of goal. We've seen it so many times when teams have tried to turn the screw against Bayern. They've either missed a big chance or they have maybe not taken advantage of a period of dominance. But Bayern this time didn't take advantage of it. And I think we'll obviously touch on it in a bit more detail later, but a very interesting performance from Dortmund. Certainly not what I expected, but in the end they've got the 3 points and it's blown the title race wide open.
Yeah, so that's a good point actually in terms of Bayern didn't really seem to cause too much bother for Burkey. We spoke to him after in the mix zone and Archie joked with him that the moment where he jumped out to stop the cross was one of the best seasons he's made all season, and he laughed at that, but he was quite happy to admit himself that there were no any real big change. There's no big saves he had to make, while on the other hand, Manuel Neuer had to make at least one. I can't remember if Aubameyang's first chance in the second half was a deflection or if it was Neuer that got a hand to it, but you're right. I mean, I think that was kind of the odd thing. I think we can't be misled by the stats in terms of possession stats or maybe how many crosses or how the fact that the large parts of the game were played in by Dortmund's half. I think that was largely due to the fact that Dortmund are quite happy to give up possession, and because Tuchel probably has seen this season that Bayern don't really seem to do much with it. Ribery seemed to do a lot. He seemed to be the key focus, at least as far as I could tell. He seemed to be, even though he's still not entirely fit, he looks a step above the other players right now, which is quite concerning, I think, for Bayern, because I think a Bayern Munich that's in form probably does start to latch on to those crosses. You do see a Thomas Müller or a Lewandowski catching on to the end of them, but things just don't seem to be working for them right now. I guess.
Yeah, I think one of the guys when you were talking obviously in Dortmund, I think it was maybe Kit that mentioned that Dortmund having that extra centre half really helped them in the second half, because you saw Bayern trying to throw balls into the box, with Alaba especially. I think in the first half that was a kind of a key tactic for Ancelotti, but with Ginter, Bartra and Socrates in the box, Dortmund just completely outnumbered what Bayern had in the box, and it was kind of quite easy for them to an extent. I mean, I know that when the ball's into the box, anything can happen, but Dortmund were always first to get onto those crosses, so perhaps that was something that Tuchel read before the game.
Yeah, because I think we spoke about it last week. We both expected, or at least I did, I thought we'd see Dortmund kind of revert back to the kind of more gung-ho approach of really getting in Bayern's face like we saw Hoffenheim do and Frankfurt and Cologne to a lesser extent. But it seemed as though Tuchel really showed his tactical knowledge here by almost flipping the general system on its head. Interesting point, Andrea Schürrle actually after the game said that the way that they've been training right now, they aren't at their very best with the ball. So he said they had been working on off the ball tactics and, you know, the way of closing space down and tracking their men. It certainly seemed to pay off, but I think Tuchel deserves a lot of credit for, not only picking the right team on the day, but he also picked a tactic which I don't think we've really seen Dortmund play at all this season, maybe even at all last season. I think for a team to just completely change their formation and completely change their tactics from one week to the next is really quite impressive.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that game on Saturday highlighted the kind of tactical planning that Tuchel puts into his teams. I mean, we saw obviously them starting with a kind of almost like four different lines of play. They had, you know, three at the back, three kind of in that that central area, then one ahead and then three in attack, and then it changed again to I think it was 3-4-3, and then it changed at the end to 5-4-1, I think, something like that. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of along those lines, and that's really, I think that's a really impressive element of detail. It was actually interesting reading Marty Perano's second book on Pep Guardiola, where he mentions that when before the German Cup final, Pep Guardiola basically told his Bayern players that Dortmund would play in four or five different ways. And I'm very curious to see if, well, obviously very curious to know if Ancelotti had gone into that level of detail, because to me it kind of looked as if they didn't really have any ideas. There was no kind of clear patterns of play in the second half in particular. I mean, obviously we saw Alaba getting forward, getting a lot of balls into the box in the first half, but in the second period, I didn't really see a lot. Even when they brought on guys like Sanchez, I didn't see any kind of coherent way of playing. And it kind of raises concerns, I think, from Bayern's point of view, that they are so reliant on Robert Lewandowski, who, to be honest, hasn't even been that good this season. I mean, that probably tells you everything. Thomas Müller hasn't scored in the Bundesliga this season. Frank Ribéry, like you said, was their liveliest player without really, you know, creating a lot of chances. He tended to carry the ball 30, 40 yards up the pitch without really making that decisive pass. Arjen Robben, for me, actually looks quite fragile this season, I think. So that's a real cause for concern. I mean, I would be interested, obviously, because you were there, what your thoughts were in particular about Bayern's kind of attacking play.
Yeah, I think that was probably the main standout in terms of they just seem to lack genuine options. Archie and I did a Facebook Live just before the game when the team lineups were coming out. One of the things that really struck me first was that the only real game winner or match winner who you could look on that Bayern bench was Douglas Costa. Like, the rest of the players were defenders. I mean, and Renato Sanchez. Again, Renato Sanchez comes into this team. It does nothing. I don't like grilling this guy every week, but
you've got beef.
Yeah, well, I guess I do. But when you sign a guy for that much money, he has to be able to come on in a game like this and make a difference, because ultimately, it's fine if Bayern have a quiet 45 minutes, but Ancelotti and a team like Bayern Munich should have options to come off the bench. But instead, we saw Renato Sanchez come on. We saw Douglas Costa came in, and Costa perhaps was the only one who really offered anything. And Rafinha came on for Lam, which really seemed to just completely muck up that kind of chemistry on the right wing. And, you know, Ancelotti did have options, but I wonder, the question I was going to ask you just a minute ago is this just a simple case of Bayern missing some of their key players and having an off game, and they're not, just haven't clicked yet? Or do you think we're actually beginning to see the end days of this kind of generation of Bayern players, and there's major surgery needed?
I think it could be a bit of all of those things. I mean, Bayern obviously have the oldest squad in the Bundesliga, so your point about this being kind of the end of that kind of generation is certainly legitimate. I mean, Philipp Lahm was saying last week that he's considering retiring possibly at the end of this season. Xabi Alonso already, I mean, I think we said this on last week's pod, that for me, Xabi Alonso looks already way off the pace.
Well, sorry to interrupt, but he's the one who gave that back pass that Aubameyang picked up on and should have scored from.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I just think he struggles, especially if there's a quick turnover of play and the opposition take advantage of it. It'd be interesting to see, obviously, in the future when Leipzig go to Munich, how he copes with that kind of intensity. I just think in that kind of position, you need a player who can recover in situations really well. And I think Dortmund have got that in someone like Julian Weigl. I don't think Xabi Alonso is up to that kind of standard right now. It's interesting that actually I've been quite critical of Thiago in his time at Bayern, but I thought he did really, really well considering the kind of the pressure he was under, especially from Mario Götze, who we'll probably talk about later. But again, I look at Bayern's squad planning over the summer. I mean, I know there's been a lot of kind of change with obviously Matthias Sammer stepping down, Pep Guardiola leaving, but that team is badly in need of some injection of not just youthfulness, but players who are genuinely at the top of their game. Renato Sanchez, like you said, I'm not discrediting the fact that he won the European Championships, but he hasn't really got a really proven track record playing Champions League football every week, that kind of thing. And I think Bayern maybe could have done with that kind of player. Maybe, I don't know, maybe an attacking midfielder, maybe a winger. But then again, we say a winger, but I mean, they've already got three. So, I mean, yeah, maybe this Bayern team is coming to an end. I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see how this Bayern team develops, because, you know, the one apparent advantage of bringing Ancelotti in was that the players wouldn't be drained from Guardiola's intensity. But you're beginning to see that it's kind of actually worked out the opposite, where I'm not saying there's a level of complacency, but there's maybe not the same level of detail in how they're trying to play. You know, I mean, I look at Thomas Müller's role, for example, and I'm not really sure what he's actually supposed to be doing, because we all know he's not a winger. So is he waiting on balls coming into the box? Is he tasked with combining with Lewandowski? Is Lewandowski meant to supply chances to him? I'm just not seeing it right now. It's great that Bayern can go and obviously beat PSV Eindhoven comfortably, beat Rostov comfortably in the Champions League. But as we've seen in this month, I mean, this was the month that was being kind of described as the big test for Ancelotti. They've played Mönchengladbach, which was a bit of a damp squib of a game. They've played Hoffenheim, who are obviously in great form. They played Frankfurt, I think, maybe at the end of last month. And they played Dortmund on Saturday, and they've got Bayer Leverkusen next week. Big test of Ancelotti's credentials, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we like you said, we spoke about this at the start of the season in terms of the players they signed, and they spent a lot of money on Mats Hummels, who, I mean, I don't think anyone would begrudge the money they did spend on Hummels. He's obviously one of the best defenders in the world. He has a relationship and a chemistry with Boateng. And yeah, you know, he's a proven player. Sure, he's not playing great, but there's no real concerns over what he can offer. But aside from him, if you want to, I mean, and I do, I want to, if you want to discount Sanchez for the moment, saying he's not really up to the billing at the moment, they didn't sign any attacking players this summer, which kind of baffles me, considering, I mean, sure, they spent a lot of money bringing in Douglas Costa last season, and they've obviously got Kingsley Coman as well, but we have constantly made comparisons, not comparisons, but we've constantly made almost a humour of the fact that Julian Green is on that bench every week. And it's not because Julian Green really deserves to be on that Bayern bench. He's on the bench because there's no one else to be there. And that's a huge problem, because there's no doubt that Ancelotti looked at his bench on Saturday, saw Julian Green, and then turn to Rafinha or someone and said, oh, right, okay, well, maybe try something else. If he can't turn to Julian Green in a game like this and say, right, you should come on and score a goal for us, then why the hell is he playing? And a team like Bayern Munich should have a striker on the bench who can do that. Now, Bayern Munich fans might argue that all things being well and good, they would have a Robin, a Coman, and maybe Thomas Müller would be on the bench to make way for these two guys, and then Müller can come in. But when you're a club the size of Bayern Munich and you're spending the kind of money you are, you don't really get those excuses, in my opinion. In terms of, it's so weird. I was actually on a podcast today, actually, and one of the points I made was that we're so used to now, we're so used to, in the modern game in the last 5 or 6 years, Bayern Munich being this really spotless, smooth, you know, careful machine that just happily ticks along, and there's no way to set it off track, because, you know, it's this behemoth, because of what Jupp Heynckes done, and of course what Pep Guardiola done. But you only have to look past Heynckes to the way things happened under Van Gaal, maybe Klinsmann, blah blah blah, before them, to know that it's actually quite easy for things to come undone at Bayern Munich. And I think they have the recipe, you know, the factors at play this season for something like that to happen, which leads me on to my next question, Ross. What has to happen now, either in terms of going up or down, before fans start getting on the back of Ancelotti? Do you sense that Bayern fans are beginning to get a little nervous with him right now?
I can see that Bayern fans are questioning the style of football. I mean, to be fair, there were games under Guardiola where Bayern fans were questioning the type of football that they were playing. It was seemed to be
not just fans, Der Kaiser himself.
Yeah. I mean, well, obviously, I mean, I think for me, that's one of the interesting things, is that there was all this kind of I'm not seeing a deliberate attempt to unsettle Bayern particularly, but you saw from guys like from Matthias, from Beckenbauer, from Samer after the game, you kind of sense that there was a little bit of friction there between those guys and Pep Guardiola, just because he was a little bit different. And Ancelotti, he kind of conforms to Bayern's ideals, right? I mean, he's a family guy, he's from the north of Italy, you know, it's this mia san mia kind of attitude. And you kind of sense that Ancelotti is not coming under any kind of scrutiny from the board, or from, obviously they don't have a sporting director right now, so there's not really a sense of accountability there for him. So I'm not sure. I mean, I believe that the role of the manager can be sometimes overrated. I think it's actually much easier to do things wrong. And I'm not sure Ancelotti is the kind of guy who is going to suddenly turn around his training methods. If this is a result of the change in training, then I don't think it's going to get better. I mean, maybe Bayern will make some additions in January, but January's not a great time to do it. I mean, the market is not as best in terms of value. I mean, you see a lot of overinflated transfer fees. But then again, you know, the reason Ancelotti was brought in was to go the extra yard in the European Cup. So you kind of have to give him that time. But as we'll probably talk about later, Leipzig have taken advantage of the fact that Bayern are kind of flat-footed.
Bayern play Rostov this week. I think probably most of the people listening to this podcast may actually be doing so before or during or perhaps after the game, so we won't really pick up on that too much. But that's an away trip to, you know, untold lands. Then they come home to play Bayer Leverkusen a few days later at the Allianz Arena. Then the next week, they're at home to Atletico Madrid. Then they play Wolfsburg. And then just before the winter break, they are at home to Leipzig. I mean, I know we don't want to start ringing bells here and stuff because it's still early in the season, as you say. Clearly doesn't seem to be much pressure on Ancelotti in that regard. But what kind of results did Bayern have to pick up in these games? Because it's all well and good to say Ancelotti's here to win the European Cup, but if he loses his second game to Atletico Madrid and he's stumbling in the league, things don't look as though they're going to plan.
No, I completely agree. Yeah, I mean, but I just don't know. I don't know where that kind of accountability is going to come from. I mean, with Pep Guardiola, you had Matthias Samer barking down his neck most weekends on the touchline, but with Ancelotti, I don't really see where that's going to come from. What do they need to do in the next couple of weeks? I mean, the Rostov game actually is probably the worst game that they could have had, because we've seen Bayern go to places like Borisov in the last few years and just completely crumble. It's a different kind of environment. And yeah, they're coming back to a game that, you know, I tipped Leverkusen to finish second at the start of the season, which obviously hasn't really turned out particularly well, but this is the kind of team that really could take advantage of Bayern being tired, being complacent, being a little bit sluggish. And then also, like you say, Atletico Madrid, I mean, that's a huge test of Bayern's European Cup credentials, but they might already have qualified by that point. So, I don't know. I'm interested to see in particular how they do against Leipzig, because by that point, certainly with the way that Leipzig are going, the gap could be much bigger than possibly 3 points.
Well, yeah, I think that's kind of the worst case scenario, that they go into this winter break scalped by Atletico Madrid in the group stages and potentially 6 points off Leipzig with Dortmund breathing down their necks. So I guess we'll have to see. But let's move on to the other team who actually won this game briefly, because I think one of the interesting subplots, this is obviously the way that Thomas Tuchel has had this almost like a monkey on his back since he got to Dortmund. Maybe not a monkey on his back, that might be a bit strong, but, you know, the way that his record against Bayern in what was a fantastic season last year, maybe the only real blight on his record was his record against Pep Guardiola's team. He's now won against Bayern. The team, perhaps more importantly, I think, have now won. In my opinion, not only is it interesting that Tuchel managed to get a win over Bayern, but this team, which is actually very few players actually remain of Klopp's period. I mean, I don't even mean the last season. I mean the actual team that was winning titles. There's maybe only like two or three players, four players left to actually play These are the few guys who actually remember routinely beating Bayern Munich, and I think it's really interesting that they now have this experience of being able to beat Bayern. I think I saw it's the first home win for Dortmund against Bayern since 2012.
Yep.
Which is crazy. So I mean, Ross, how much do you think? We don't want to be swimming in hyperbole here and making arguments that this is now Dortmund's title to lose, but how much do you think psychologically perhaps this win over Bayern is for the squad?
It's hard to know. I mean, given the way that Dortmund have played at times this year, you kind of almost expect that they're going to go into a game next Saturday and drop points. And that would be very typical Dortmund in the last few years. But yeah, I think you're right. I mean, like, I think Tuchel's season last year was practically flawless, apart from obviously the Liverpool Europa League game and then the performances against Bayern, because they competed well in a lot of those games. German Cup final in particular was a really combative game, and they really took the game to Bayern, but they were just a little bit off the pace. They were just didn't really have that kind of quality to take advantage of the kind of period of dominance that they had in Berlin. And yeah, I mean, it's a massive boost for the players, especially. I mean, you said they're like, there's not many players who will have experienced that. I mean, I think probably the only one who really comes to mind would be Marcel Schmelzer. I mean, Mario Götze would be, I guess, but
Piszczek as well as the other obvious one.
Piszczek. So those kind of guys are the experienced heads, and you can imagine there was an element of doubt in a lot of these players. Schmelzer obviously wouldn't have left Dortmund to go anywhere else, but you can imagine there was an element of doubt going through their minds that maybe their period of kind of competition at the top of the Bundesliga had come to an end. But I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, that I actually don't think that beating Bayern is necessarily a kind of compulsory thing to win the Bundesliga. I think you have to make sure that you win every other game, because that level of consistency would be enough to 9 times out of 10 win you the Bundesliga. I mean, if Dortmund were able to replicate last season's form this year, I think without a shadow of a doubt they would be certainly favourites to go on and win the title, because of how impressive they were and how consistent they were in the games that they had to be. My concern is that there's games that Dortmund come up against in the Bundesliga where they've got a lot of young players, and sometimes, I mean, like, for example, if you look at games against like Hertha Berlin on the Friday night, I mean, they played guys like Emery Moore, and these guys just maybe didn't have that kind of mental fortitude to make sure they got the win, you know what I mean? Like, they obviously went behind and they were chasing the game, and it's a big ask for a young squad. And I don't think Dortmund are expected to win the league, and I'm actually really impressed that they are 3 points away from Bayern. Obviously, it's 6 from Leipzig who are leading the chase, but yeah, I mean, I think for Dortmund's point of view, their season is going to be defined by firstly what they do in the Champions League. I think that has to be a priority, because I think they can do really well there. And then again, what they do against everyone else. What they do against Bayern, I think, in my opinion, is secondary. But I know that you think that from Tuchel's point of view, it was really important for him to make sure that he got that win, because he was brought in to make Dortmund a competitor for the Bundesliga.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see your point. I just my kind of train of thought is that when Dortmund were winning Bundesliga titles, it was when Klopp had Bayern's number. You know, sure, you're right. Mathematically, you can win the Bundesliga by not beating Bayern, but you know, taking 3 or 4 points off them over the course of the season, I think, obviously, really helps as well.
Yeah.
But I mean, we just spoke about, you know, the tricky run Bayern have running up to Christmas, and you know, Dortmund's is actually just as treacherous. They go away to Frankfurt next weekend. Obviously, after a home game against Legia Warsaw, then they play Gladbach at home, who could maybe even have a new coach by then. Then they're away to Real Madrid, which probably won't pay too much difference because of probably they're already qualified, actually, haven't they? I think. And then they have away trips to Cologne and Hoffenheim before a home match against Augsburg to start the year. So, arguably, they're like what in the next 4 Bundesliga games, they've got three of those are against 3 of the most informed teams in the league. Not just informed teams who really know how, you know, close things down and stop goals from going in. So, as you said, I think it'll be interesting to see how they do in those games, because it's all well and good getting 3 points against Bayern, but if you're going to lose to Frankfurt the next week and then drop 4 points against Cologne and Hoffenheim, then it doesn't really matter. But I mean, before we move on to the next game we want to talk about, I think if there's one player who I think really stood out in this game, it was probably Mario Götze. Now, we've been kind of quietly praising him without going overboard for, like, you know, the slow but steady progress he's made this season under Tuchel. Obviously, since he came in, Tuchel saying he has to lose a certain amount of weight, shaved his head. He seems to be far more modest, at least in public. And we're now seeing the performances really pick up steam. And Saturday seemed to be a real landmark game for him, in my opinion, in terms of his return at Dortmund so far. And he couldn't have picked a better stage for it.
Yeah, I would echo what you guys talked about at the Westfalen on Saturday. Like, he, first of all, I mean, he was really important early on in the game because he made some fantastic runs, and it was his run that actually opened up the chance to score the first goal before he even crossed to Aubameyang. So, you know, I think that says a lot about his attacking qualities. But he's obviously going through a very important evolution in his career, which is quite bizarre at that kind of age. I mean, you really don't see that very often, that a player who comes through with a huge reputation is actually having to evolve his game, 24, 25 years old. I mean, I think that's probably unheard of at that kind of level of European football. But I was really impressed with his work off the ball, actually. I think he did a lot of selfless work for the team, especially when Thiago was dropping into the defensive line to pick up possession. Götze was really covering that space all the time. And I think that showed a little bit of discipline. It showed that he's obviously, you know, working hard in training. And you mentioned all those factors about having to lose weight and, you know, make him a little bit more modest and perhaps having something to prove to Dortmund supporters. I mean, he said that he made a mistake going to Munich, but I'm pretty sure most of the Dortmund hardcores will have had something in the back of their mind that, oh, you actually left us for Bayern, so you have to show that you really mean it. And yeah, I think this season he's looked good. And I think, as I think it was Kit that said at the stadium, that he's now a more intelligent player in terms of his positioning, in terms of his positional play. He's now more of a kind of cog in the team rather than just an individual player. And that probably has a lot of value for Dortmund. They need those kind of cogs to work in tandem rather than just having players who are a little bit erratic in possession, who want to go on, you know, mazy runs. I'm thinking of guys like Dembele and Emery Moore, who've still got a little bit to go in that regard. But yeah, very impressive and interesting to see, yeah, like how that trajectory continues over the season, because, you know, like you said, I mean, he's not playing in the same way that he was under Jurgen Klopp. So, yeah, I wonder how Tuchel plans to keep him in that kind of system. I mean, I think we also can't understate, in terms of, you know, the publicity and the media attention that he's under, to make that kind of performance against Bayern was massive, because I don't know if you would agree with this, but I think in a lot of big games, not just even this season, but even at Bayern, and maybe even before that when he was at Dortmund, I don't think he really stamped his mark on a lot of big games. World Cup final, obviously, is a bit of an exception because he came on and scored the winning goal, but he started from the bench. I mean, I think that was the one kind of gap in his almost his CV, that he's not really a player who's gone on and really stamped his kind of style on big, high-pressure kind of games.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I think when he first came through at Bayern, he was almost like a flashy winger of sorts, who could skip by defenders and he could run at defenders, much like, you know, the way Emery Moore and Dembele do, although he was never really as fast as either of those players. But he was that kind of flashy, tricky player, and he's completely changed in the sense that he now plays as that intelligent link-up player between the lines. And I think that kind of role itself just naturally leans to the idea that a player has to take on more responsibility, because he can't, when he was younger, he could just sit out in the wing, wait for the ball to come to him, and then do his thing. Now he has to go find the space that he wants. And that's only, and a player who plays in that position can only do that as, in terms of how pragmatic they want to be. So naturally, I think he's been given far more responsibility. I think it was really telling, actually, that he started over players like Castro, for example. I think I mentioned that earlier on the night and early in this podcast, but it's something. I mean, Mario Götze isn't the kind of player you play when you want to really put up a defensive line against Bayern Munich. He's the guy you bring on if you want to score a goal. So for Tuchel to decide to keep his trust in him, and to obviously, as we now saw, set up the goal was something else. So it's, again, another encouraging performance from him.
Yeah. Now, I guess you probably want to move on to the table toppers. Everyone's favourite cup of tea, Rasenballer Sport Leipzig, who picked up a really, really impressive victory against Bayer Leverkusen, because I think a lot of people did tip Leipzig to take this game comfortably, given the fact that Leverkusen are so inconsistent. But this wasn't really a one-sided kind of game. Leipzig really had to dig in, didn't they, to get the 3 points?
Yeah, this game was just stupendously good. I was watching it with our colleague Heckel, and we were just going nuts. Obviously, the first goal went in after a minute. Second goal came right after it. And from there on in, it was just non-stop. And the weird thing was that it was an outstanding game, not just because of obviously the goals, but both teams were actually really, really good. Now, that sounds odd to say because Leverkusen throw away the lead, but for huge parts of this game, I actually thought they were pretty spot on. It's interesting that Schmidt dropped Hernandez and played Mehmedi up front. I thought he actually had a really good game. And I thought Julian Brandt was just outstanding. You know, he set up the goal for the first one. He scored the second. And then he was taken down for the penalty, which should have been Bayer's third. And probably should have ended up confirming the win. Now, obviously, there were problems. And I think Leverkusen just struggled. As we said in the preview to this game, we just think Leverkusen perhaps just aren't clicking quite like Leipzig are right now, and I think that eventually played out. But for large parts of this game, Leipzig looked really, really strong, struggled here. And we have seen this before. I think if Leverkusen are anything, they're a team that know how to specifically set up against big teams. We've seen them cause trouble to Bayern in the past. They obviously beat Dortmund early in the season. And they've obviously gotten good wins in the Champions League against teams who are deemed better than them. And I think Friday's match was another case of that, where they offered huge amount of trouble to Leipzig, but as seems to be the case, nothing seems to be able to stop them. Really, once again, impressed by Emil Forsberg. He doesn't seem to get as much of the limelight compared to, obviously, most people back in the UK are interested in Oliver Burke. Timo Werner's the golden boy in terms of German fans who actually care about Leipzig, and then you've obviously got other people like Poulsen and Keita, but week in, week out, it really seems to be like Emil Forsberg seems to be the guy who's knocking defenders down, and he seems to get into the positions and setting everyone up. And I just thought it was an outstanding game, and it was once again another one that really seemed to show Leipzig's credentials to really be at the top here. To come back from a win like that against, to come back and win against Leverkusen, and to take points off Dortmund as well already, or something else. And I mean, if I was a Bayern Munich fan watching this result, it wouldn't have been fun viewing at all.
Yeah, no, I mean, I completely concur what you just said about Emil Forsberg. I mean, he's an absolutely fantastic player. I mean, it's kind of interesting that he's almost the kind of technician to everyone else who basically runs around and plays like school children. But he's the kind of guy who has that measured pass or has the key kind of quality in the last third. And I actually watched Sweden against France during the international break, and he was absolutely outstanding in that game as well. And obviously he came to Leipzig with a huge reputation from Malmo. He was kind of branded as being the next Zlatan, the heir to the throne, so to speak. But the way that he's playing is just phenomenal. I think actually statistically, I don't want to just throw numbers into the wind right now, but I think he's probably one of the most valuable players in the Bundesliga right now in terms of his chance creation, in terms of his goals, in terms of the shots he's having on goal. It's really impressive, and the one thing that really kind of stands out for me with this Leipzig team actually is just the amount of depth that they have. We talked about Bayern earlier in terms of the fact that they didn't have maybe a second option or a joker card that they could throw into that big game. Dortmund do have options. I mean, Pulisic, Dembele, Moore didn't start the game. Castro didn't start the game either. But with Leipzig, I mean, you've got five or six genuinely excellent attacking players for two positions, essentially. I mean, Timo Werner, Yusuf Poulsen, Forsberg, Oliver Burke as well, David Selke, who didn't even come on in that game. Yeah, very impressive. And I mean, I know that This is certainly I'm not got the fishing rod out for you, Stefan, but I'm not comparing them to Leicester. But they certainly I think genuinely have a chance of competing for this championship. We've seen that. Okay, you know, I should probably qualify that with the fact that we've already seen a team like Hoffenheim come into the Bundesliga and play fantastic for the first half of the season, ironically with Ralf Rangnick as the coach, and they fell away at the second half of the season. The one advantage that Leipzig have is they are not a traditional newly promoted team. I think that that cannot be emphasised enough. This is not just some newly promoted team. And I see even the Bundesliga like on social media saying that, oh, you know, they're the first newly promoted team to win a living game. And I'm like, yeah, you're right to an extent, but they're not a generic newly promoted team. This is a squad that has had huge investment over the last 2 or 3 years. It's not just been obviously at the one time. They've invested even when they were in the second division. And I'm not saying it wouldn't be surprising necessarily, given that I predicted that they would finish in the bottom half of the league. but they certainly do have a chance of pushing this a long distance. I think they have durability. I think they've got continuity right throughout the team. Even, you know, I think you mentioned in one of the earlier podcasts of this season that you were concerned about their centre-half pairing or the defensive strength. But these guys look well up to speed, and it's all about the collective, and it seems to be working.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we want to start, even perhaps still prematurely considering them as title challengers, I think one of the key things we have to bear in mind here is that perhaps unlike, for example, Cologne, they don't have a single player who's dragging them through every week. I know we just talked about Forsberg, and he probably is their most important player right now, but he's sitting on 5 goals and 5 assists right now, which is incredible, obviously, after 10 games. But Timo Werner's also got 5 goals, Sabitzer's got 3, Keita's got 3, David Selke's got 2, you know, so they're not like a traditional surprise team who have, you know, a solid 11 or maybe even just a solid 4 or 5 guys who are doing better than expected and, you know, like Leicester, will maybe go on and play for bigger teams next season. They have players in abundance, as you said, who can, if Forsberg has a month off, then they have players who can come in for him. If Timo Werner, who on Friday didn't really look up to much, I mean, he took Jonathan Town a few runs and he actually did quite well there. He didn't get on the score sheet, but that's fine because Forsberg, etc., did, you know. So I think that's the key thing, which I'm just echoing really what you say there, but really can't stress enough that this team has almost been built for a title challenge. You know, this team, if you were purposely building a team for a title challenge, the first thing you think of is we need depth. And I think it's interesting that Leipzig haven't spent their money on more reputable, bigger talents. They've decided to say this really, really focus on building up these foundations, and it's working because from 1 week to the next, it's an amalgamation of you know, specific key players. But so, I mean, I guess the next question here, Ross, is where do we continue to try and fit Leipzig into this Bundesliga narrative? I mean, they have to play Bayern, obviously, at the end of the year. I mean, do you think that they can continue pushing on? Do you think that they can maintain that top four spot? Because we just spoke about the way that Dortmund, sure, they've beaten Bayern, but they now have to go on and keep that level of consistency. In terms of Leipzig's coming fixtures, they go away to Freiburg, which is no easy match. Then they play Schalke. They still have to play Hertha as well. And then, of course, they play Bayern Munich and Frankfurt before the end of the season. Oh, no, sorry, they play Frankfurt in January. My apologies. So these guys, they also have key games coming up. But when do we start putting the pressure on them to maintain this form?
I think we can start putting the pressure on them now because, like we've said, I mean, this is a team that has been purpose-built for a title challenge. Red Bull's intention is not to be a Hoffenheim where they're just kind of bumbling around in mid-table most of the time. I think it's really interesting because there's a couple of really important factors, I think, because, first of all, they've got squad depth. They've got great depth. That's a huge factor in whether they can compete for the championship or not. Secondly is that they don't have European football to contend with. So all the little kind of wears and tears, the little niggles that Bayern are going to pick up in the Champions League. Dortmund are going to lose key players if they obviously maintain a fight for the European Cup. And they don't, and Leipzig don't have that. If you also look at their injury record this season, they've not lost any key players for any period of the season. I mean, that's, again, I don't think that's a fluke. I mean, I'm not going to go all Raymond Verheyen on us here, but I don't see that as being a fluke. I think the load is really well managed. Actually, interesting, there's an interview with Timo Werner in one of the local papers, and he was talking about how he was talking about just this huge entourage that Leipzig have. I mean, he was comparing it to Stuttgart, and he was just talking about how, you know, the entourage that he had, the squad has. They're even looking at, you know, like eyesights before the game. They're looking at really finite details. It's really impressive the way that they're doing things. And he was talking about how, when he came from Stuttgart to Leipzig, that they gave him an individual sports psychologist. They gave him a change of diet, etc. So I don't think this is a fluke. Another interesting bit was that the club was studying the kind of the importance of sleep as well. So all of these little kind of quote unquote marginal gains are probably helping them as well, especially when Bayern right now are one paced, they look slow, they're much older. I certainly think that we can start considering Leipzig as a title contender, and almost definitely that they will finish in the top three or four this season.
So the kids are all right. Briefly, before we try and wrap this up, we should probably note on Leverkusen, because I'll ask you for what you think in a moment, but I kind of feel almost a sense of sympathy for them, because I actually thought they threw away in almost a typical Leverkusen fashion on Friday, but I think they really gave a good account of themselves, at least for a solid 60 minutes of going toe-to-toe with, well, undoubtedly the best team in Germany right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the interesting kind of difference between Leverkusen and Leipzig. Although the two managers come from the same kind of school of football, Leipzig seem to be able to almost kind of pack away this high-pressure intensity and almost just kind of be quite pragmatic. And I don't really know if Leverkusen can do that. I'm really impressed with Benny Henrichs at right back, the young player who made his Germany debut in midweek with the national team. He is coming on leaps and bounds. However, I kind of have doubts as to whether a team can maintain that kind of intensity for 80 minutes. As I said, I think Leverkusen have to be able to kill out games at times. There's been a kind of one kind of flaw under Roger Schmidt, is that they are all really gung ho, and even in the Champions League, at times they tend to do that. And you know, maybe it's better served that they just be a little bit more pragmatic and just sit a little bit deeper. And I think they actually did that in the Dortmund game to an extent when they were under a bit of pressure. They soaked it up as well as they could, and they sprung a couple of counter attacks, and they managed to get their rewards. I know there's a little bit of negativity around Leverkusen right now, but I think they're recovering well. I think since the victory over Tottenham at Wembley, they are on a kind of good trajectory. And I think by the end of the season, I mean, it's obviously much early to say, you know, how it's going to end up. But I think they're certainly in contention for a top four. And that, at the end of the day, was their expectation, especially given that Bayern, Dortmund and Leipzig are competing for the championship. I think Leverkusen will be more than happy to finish in the top four.
Yeah, I think the point you make about the the almost like the reputation around the club right now is an interesting one, because I saw a few Dortmund fans making note of the fact that the way they're playing Schalke, or Leverkusen are playing Schalke in the next couple of weeks, and you know, Schalke on the verge of overtaking Leipzig in the league table, and I actually made the point to one or two of them that had results going another way this weekend, Leverkusen would have actually finished above Dortmund this season, or they would be currently sitting above them. So as to say, obviously, if Dortmund had lost to Bayern and Leipzig had lost to Leverkusen, Leverkusen would be sitting above Dortmund right now. So, you know, despite the fact that they are currently sitting, you know, ninth in the table, there's very fine margins in the Bundesliga between success and failure. And I think Leverkusen seem to jump between the two from week one week to the next. I don't think there's any hesitation with the fact that I'm actually quite a fan of Roger Schmidt. I think we both are. And Leverkusen are by no means a perfect setup, but I'm also intrigued to see how they approach the coming games, because they have an away game in Munich after this Champions League week, and the way their season's going right now, I can completely... I wouldn't be surprised to see them actually go and win or even get a result in Munich, despite just losing to Leipzig. And then they've got games against Schalke and Cologne coming up as well before the end of the month. So it could be a disaster. They could lose 3 or 4 of the next 5 games, but I could also see them possibly winning those games because they're against these bigger teams. So I guess it remains to be seen. I think the point you make that's actually probably worth considering is that maybe just the discrimination that they get from other groups of fans in the Bundesliga for being a quote-unquote plastic club can sometimes play a part in how people perceive their success or lack thereof. But I guess we'll see in the coming weeks just to see how well they're doing.
Yeah, no, I agree with that point completely. I think we want to wrap this up.
Yeah, I've got dinner to make.
I think it's probably been the craziest Bundesliga weekend for a while. I mean, even like, you know, we obviously don't want to talk in detail about the other games, but, you know, last minute free kick for Cologne, Frankfurt getting a last minute goal with a debutant. I mean, seriously, if you're not watching the Bundesliga, then you're absolutely mental, because you can't really match not just the entertainment value, but I think the high quality of football. Obviously, make sure that you check us out on Facebook. We are. What's the Facebook? I can't even remember what the Facebook page is called.
Good thing you did this segment. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Tribune Podcast. So easy enough. But as ever, as we always say every week, if you guys are enjoying the show, please do go on iTunes and give us a ranking, give us a rating, because it helps a lot with the algorithm there, and it helps us get through the muddled, crowdy space that is sports podcasting. And of course, if you ever want to have a question, do send them to us on Twitter and Facebook. I believe someone just sent us a question on Twitter or on Facebook rather, just before we came on, and Ross, you had a good chat with him about it. So we are always available. We purposely don't cover every game of the weekend. We like to pick out specific ones for you guys to really get in depth in, but we're always happy to answer questions day to day. So get in touch with us on all the usual channels. Go give us a like on iTunes, and we'll see you next week. Cool.
Lovely.
Lovely jubbly.
Sound good?
48 minutes.